Welcome to Rancho Marietta Community Service District, regular board meeting, January 17th, 2024. It's 4 p.m. Amelia, if we can do roll call.
Roll call. Director Booth.
Present.
Director Butler.
Here.
Director Janko.
Here.
Director Mabee.
Here.
Director Pohl.
Here.
Thank you.
Item two, consider adoption of the agenda. If I'm not seeing anything, I make a motion to adopt the agenda as written. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Director Butler. Roll call. Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item three is closed session. We have multiple items. I do anticipate taking the, well, what's now left of the full hour. Amelia, if I don't think we're going to get done by five after or so, I will text you with an ETA, but we do have a packed closed session. With that, I'd like to stop the meeting and the board adjourn into closed session, please.
Thank you. We are recording whenever you're ready to begin.
Thank you. Welcome to the Rancho Marietta Community Service District, January 17th, regular board meeting. Item number four, open session. Direction was given to staff and to legal counsel. No decisions were made in closed session, so we're going to start open session. I do apologize to everybody. Your time is very valuable. I did get admonished by legal counsel in there, but we did have some issues that we had to attend to. With that, item number five, consent calendar.
I'll move consent.
Thank you. Amelia, could we have roll call, please?
You need a second.
I have a second.
Oh, I'll second it.
Thank you, Director Booth. Thank you, Director Mabee. Roll call, Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler?
Aye.
Director Janko?
Aye.
Director Mabee?
Aye.
Director Pohl?
Aye.
Thank you.
Item number six, staff reports. We're going to start with the GM's report. Mabee, please.
I thought I'd have a little more time on that consent calendar.
Well, then I can stall. I can move over.
No, it's okay. I found the right page.
Okay.
I have the report that's before you. I'm not going to go through all of it. But I'm just going to hit the highlights, I think.
Okay.
So one of the things I want to share is that we're continuing to work on improving customer service, and we've been working on timely and reliable communication vehicles like emails and texts, and our efforts to gather customer emails and cell phones is moving along with that information now in hand for about 2,000 of our 2,500 customers. And I'll be sending out an email to those 2,000 to just confirm and validate that those are in fact good emails, and asking for feedback from customers after that, and then continuing to wrap up the final set of folks that we don't have information for. I've included a little graphic in the report that shows how we're tracking communications in order to be able to have some continuity from person to person who might be helping different customers. Let's see. I think this is a little bit out of order here. Hold on a sec.
I have it on my screen if that helps.
No, that's okay. Okay, so then in addition to the communication log there that I showed, we've got stronger efforts to respond in a timely manner to community concerns. So we have the PRA tracker that we shared at the prior meeting, and we're actually now in a position where we only have two outstanding PRA requests. So very pleased to have that down, and this method will help us to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks. And then in addition to that, we've been tracking any questions that are brought at this meeting or through correspondence, and then responding to those directly with the individual who's asked the question, and then also publishing the response up on the website, just so that we have full transparency and disclosure of interests that have been raised, concerns that have been raised by different members of the community. And then finally, in the communications realm, the communications committee has been working on a strategy. We've had two meetings so far, and the second one was just a couple days ago, so we have not had a whole lot of time to update this very much. But essentially, we're going through the communication strategy to figure out goals and objectives, audience, different mechanisms for communicating, and then we'll be finalizing that and bringing that before the whole board and subsequent meetings after we get it finalized, again with the goal of having open and honest communication with the community. And we've had the input from all the committee members and also some members of the community that have sat in on some of those meetings, so we look forward to sharing that. And then with regard to customer access, we're going to be updating the reception area in the next few weeks. We need to improve the workspace for the staff. They have very limited staff space for all of the devices that they have to use, and they don't have a very good reach of the counter. And then from the customer perspective, we don't have an ADA accessible counter level, so we're going to drop down that counter level and put in a chair so that when people come in to discuss their bills, they'll actually be able to either stand at the counter or they can take a seat. So while we're doing that, we're going to give it a fresh coat of paint and basically give it a little bit of a refresh. Next, moving on to developing and rewarding district staff. We've had professional trainings in the last month. We had 11 people who were trained on confined space training. This is a safety training, and that went over very well. In addition, we have staff continuing to take tests and get certifications, and I included a chart that shows all of the different certifications that we have. And there's a duplication in the bottom left, the treatment grade one and grade two you can ignore, but I think the takeaway from this chart is that in order to operate our two facilities, we have to have at least one grade three person with that certification, and then with the wastewater, it's a grade four. So we have that. So that's our minimum level of certification in order to be able to run the two plants. And just while I'm on sort of water operations, I want to give a shout out to both Michael and Travis, who responded very quickly to concerns that were raised by NOAA, the National Oceanic Agency, about the fish ladder at the Grand Lees Dam that was blocked and preventing fish from getting through. And there was a log and a lawn chair that had been obscuring the passage of fish. And Travis and Michael and company went out and got it taken care of within a half a day, and they were very pleased. So thank you for that activity. And then finally, I want to talk about the financial position of the district. An overarching goal of mine has been to get the district back on solid financial footing. And this is done through a variety of different steps, but at the most basic, it involves closing out prior fiscal years and then becoming compliant with annual audit obligations for those prior years and building reserves for future needs. So because fiscal years activity build on prior years activities, we needed to start with the first fiscal year that is not yet closed out, and that fiscal year is 2021. And it has taken almost 18 months to get the books in order, but we are now in a position where all of the outstanding issues of the 2021 financials and the audit have been resolved, and the information is now in the hands of the auditors. So it's their obligation now to do their vetting and run it up the chain at their organization. And we hope to have those audited financial statements issued by the end of February, and we'll probably ask the auditors to join us at the February meeting. I'm not sure if they'll come, but that would be then the first step, and we're hoping that subsequent audits won't take nearly as long as the 18 months. And And one opportunity resulting from the open prior fiscal years is that we can go back and amend expenditures that were charged to the wrong year or account, or even change the indirect cost rate that was applied. Staff developed an alternative methodology for distributing administrative costs that is based on more factors than just the numbers of positions in each unit. And we shared that first at the Finance Committee meeting earlier this month. And then it was talked about again at the special meeting on securities budget. So this methodology, which I'm going to call indirect cost rate number two, or ICR number two, considers factors like overall complexity of the operation, corresponding administrative demands, physical plant and equipment, operating budget, and the number of positions. So Mark Matulich will present scenarios applying that indirect cost rate number two to prior fiscal years. And it's unclear, and the current year, I should say. And we can have a conversation about what we do with that, if we take it back to prior fiscal years or if we just use it going forward. So it is a change to prior budgets if we incorporate it, so then it would require the board to weigh in on that. So these steps will help to ensure that we have accurate and credible financial reports with integrity. A related situation regarding valid financial reports is to address deficits on our reserve fund balances. Of the five enterprise funds, three will be in the red upon closeout of the 2021 fiscal year as it currently stands before any adjustments of the ICR. And staff requested that the Finance Committee authorize a redistribution of the district reserves for water to bring the water fund out of the negative balance at the close of the 2021 fiscal year so that we could start 21-22 off with positive balances in at least that fund. In addition to ensuring, I should say, there are two other funds that are in the negative at this point. One is drainage to the tune of about $11,000, and the other is security. And we don't have a pot of money to work on those, but if we adjust the ICR, those will change, and then we can work in future fiscal years to address those deficits. And then finally, in addition to ensuring that the reserves are presented correctly, staff is dedicated to ensuring that resources are used in prudent ways through evaluating costs and determining needs and cost-effective approaches. Operating within the means of the district's available resources results in savings that can build out reserves for future needs. The grand jury report indicated an imbalance in reserves of more than $10 million, and we will have a clearer picture of the current reserves as prior fiscal years are all closed out. We will also have a clearer picture of future plant and equipment needs as the Lumos capital improvement assessment is finalized later this year. Staff have begun to prepare the 24-25 budget, and meetings have been held with unit leaders this month and will continue in the coming month to provide staff with a fuller understanding of revenue and expenditure needs and projections for the coming year. It is likely that staff will propose a 10-15% increase in rates to ensure that all costs are covered for the coming year and that funds are available to help build up the reserves. I'm going to let Mark Matulich present the details on the current fiscal year. Ensuring water quality and access. Staff continues to work to ensure water quality is high. Annual testing for copper and lead have been done, along with other tests required by the state. And today we have Travis Bohannon here to provide a fuller report on that topic. And regarding security, Kelly's team continues to keep the gates covered and patrols out there despite several sicknesses in the last month. And I'm going to let him fill in the details regarding security. And I think that's all I have. And I'll turn it back to you for any questions.
All right. I'll turn to the board. Any questions of Mimi at this point?
No, none by me.
I have one.
You're good?
Yeah, no, I have
yeah,
one.
Go ahead.
In prior meetings, Mimi, I think we showed another PRA request that was pending. It was one from Mike Martell, and it related to pension costs, and I think we were waiting for actuarial information. Has that been received, and has that matter been closed, or is that still pending?
It's still pending.
Okay.
And Mark, I think you had an email from the actuarial rep who said, yeah, we're still working on it. We'll hopefully get you something soon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, one second. Regarding the GM's report, thank you. Specific to the GM, I'll ask you, Amelia, to follow up with board members that haven't gotten the evaluations of the GM in. If we can just send an email out to them and pick a date sometime next week so we can move that process so I can get it agendized for closed session. You have a...
I do have one public comment on the GM report. Richard Gears.
Chair. Yes, please.
Before I start, I just noted on the consent calendar that one of the things you approved isn't there. The at least not in the packet I had, the minutes for the communications meeting.
We just had the meeting yesterday.
Yeah.
I'll move those to the next meeting.
Yeah, but you approved it and it's not there.
I will make a note.
Okay. Couple of things. I had a question about the community communications tracker. Do you know when that's going to be available?
Are you talking about the customer communication log?
The answers to the questions people submit?
Oh, that we are posting to the website, and it should be posted.
Oh, okay, all right.
It's a PDF of the questions, and I thought we posted it in December, but I'll check and make sure that was done.
Okay. The other thing is I'm wondering what CSD is doing to ensure that it collects its money from the country club in the event of a bankruptcy.
Understand the question. I'm not going to opine on that. That's a legal issue that I've had conversation with Mr. Ramos. So I turn it over to you for a brief, but...
No, I appreciate the question. We are looking into it and reviewing the contract as well as general bankruptcy law.
Right.
We'll have an update for the board probably in closed session at some point.
Yep.
If a bankruptcy petition is filed.
Two points. I the general manager shared at the finance committee meeting that we did receive payment, mm-hmm. the most recent payment. And I'm understanding that the Country Club board is now talking about attempting to maintain solvency for at least another year, and they haven't yet determined a date to file for bankruptcy.
Okay.
So we would expect, hopefully, they continue to make the payments until some decisions are made in that regard based on the information that I've seen. And I think some of that, was reported in the River Valley Times.
Okay. I'm just hope that we don't lose any money on that. There are things that we can do, and I'm sure you're aware of it. But frankly, as soon as they declare bankruptcy, I think we should say they're in default. And if they don't pay, I mean, let them know in advance. If they don't pay, shut off the water. That was a part of the agreement with the Country Club, and I don't think we should put our money at risk. I know you don't want to talk about it or can't talk about it, but I think that's important.
No, understood. Understood. Understand concern. There's a lot of folks that have that.
And I would
Go
just
ahead.
Add to that was a five-year loan, and we're at about 2.5 years in, and another year would put us at 3.5, and then we'd only have, like, another year and a half. So if they can continue to operate, that's a mm-hmm. that's a great thing for everyone.
Okay. Thank you. Mark, finance administration report, please.
Okay. Great. Okay. All right, so I'll discuss the financial reports year-to-date through December 31st of 2023. Year-to-date results from operations show revenues in excess of expenditures of $1.17 million. But when considering any excess revenues over expenditures, it's important to note that significant portions of the district's revenues are designated for reserves and debt service. And that's $1.1 million in the 23-24 budget, or they're restricted for water augmentation and capital improvements That's another $555,000 in the 23-24 budget. Of the revenue generated to date in 23-24, $743,000 is considered restricted, as I just noted. And then there's also approximately $1.8 million of potential outstanding costs for water studies and or capital improvements when you compare actual cost to date to the budgeted amounts for the year. So cost management, so the point of all that is, you know, don't just look at the $1.17 million revenue over expense and think that that's all discretionary money. There's a lot of different layers and restrictions, and then pending capital improvement costs and water study related costs that are out there that will eat into that surplus. But cost management has been a priority of the district in fiscal year 23-24. And that's evidenced by the year-to-date operating expenditures, which are approximately 8% below budget year-to-date. Savings like this are important to the success of the district and will help offset the current year's budgeted deficit of $283,000, which includes the expected capital improvement projects of $1.9 million. And Amelia, I believe there's a screen with the report.
Audit update, okay.
And any questions on that before I move on to the indirect cost stream?
Any questions from the board?
No.
Nope, continue on, please.
Okay. So, let's see, indirect cost rate.
Indirect cost rate, that's the very last one. There you go.
Okay, so as Mimi mentioned earlier, staff has spent some time taking a look at the district's indirect cost rate that was implemented in 2020 and taking a look at the various operational areas and how much administrative overhead expenditures that each one of those operational areas pulls. And we did a recalibration of the indirect cost rate. And so up on the screen there, you can see a presentation of year-over-year analysis of the indirect cost rate 1, which was implemented in 2020, and then this new rate that we've derived. And that goes back several years up there on the board. And then that's taken back all the way to fiscal year 2021, and the numbers used are budget numbers. We conducted this analysis of administrative overhead costs and how each operational area uses administrative overhead. And in doing that, we utilized two allocation factors to derive what we're calling indirect cost rate number 2, or ICR number 2. Number one, we looked at headcount, right? So full-time equivalent employees, that's basically 40 hours of work per week. We went ahead and allocated payroll and HR costs to each functional area based on FTEs, strictly, because payroll and HR is driven by headcount. And then for all other areas of administrative overhead, we use this complexity of operations factor, and that takes into account factors that lend themselves to increased use of administrative overhead services, such as accounting, accounts payable, billing, customer service, overall management of plant and equipment, budgeting, and factors such as those. And these factors used in deriving this complexity of operations were net investment in capital assets, that's the property, plant, and equipment owned and operated by each functional area, total expenditures, which is an indicator of activity and resources being used in general. Restricted net assets, which require additional accounting and overall management tied to maintaining proper fund balances and making sure that restricted monies are being used appropriately. And then overall FTEs just in general, because while we're only in this complexity of operations calculation, we're only weighting 5% on total FTEs. There still is somewhat of a factor of overall costs driven by headcount. So you can see up there on the board, Amelia, why don't you scroll up to the 23-24 budget? And so basically what's some differences to point out or some things to point out. So doing this recalibrated rate, if you were to take the indirect cost rate that was in place, ICR1 from 2020, if we go through the operational areas, 37% of admin overhead was allocated to water, 25% to sewer, 4% to drainage, 2% to secure to garbage or solid waste, and 32% to security. And when we did our recalibration and we have indirect cost rate 2, the allocation of overhead has changed, obviously, and so going down the operational areas, it would be 52% to water, 27% to sewer, 3% to drainage, 4% to garbage, and 14% to security. And if to give some examples of dollars and administrative overhead that was being allocated to these operational areas as a percent of the operating expenses directly tied to these areas. For instance, under indirect cost rate 1, security, the amount of administrative overhead that was being allocated to security was 51% of what the actual direct costs were and operating expenses for that area. And so the recalibrated rate, indirect cost rate 2, that would drop down to 22%. So, and you can see, again, up there on the board, if you go through that, you see revenue, operating expense, you see the change in net position, which is revenues over operating expense, and then the next block down would be indirect cost rate 1. You can see the percentages from indirect cost rate 1 and then the amounts of administrative overhead applied. And then the second block down would be indirect cost rate 2. And you can see the percentages and you can see the amount of administrative overhead that would be applied. And then the very last line would be the delta or the change between the application of the different rates. And so that's 23-24 all the way down to 2021.
Thank you. Board members, any questions?
Mark, where does Kelly's salary go? Does it go to administrative costs or directly?
It's directly to security, yes.
For the rollover budget of 22 to 23, we subsidized solid waste. I think it was $5 per
customer
residential. So I'll say it's an outlier because we had our Prop 218 process get voted on by the community. So I don't know where that factors in because it's a one-time issue. My concern is with AB 1843, the organic waste, we might have to allocate more staff time that direction just for the enforcement and observation portions of it. I don't know if it's a half-time FTE. No one knows, right? Because we're thank you, sorry. Because we're on uncharted territories as far as that state statute. So otherwise, I understand everything you said. I just think the solid waste, where we've used it as a purely a pass-through, not assigned administrative. Obviously, this last calendar year, just getting the trash cans out, all those other things, there's been a cost, right? And where did that cost come from? That cost is going to continue. So my only comment is, I like everything solid waste. We have to do something with that, from because we're going to be robbing Peter to pay Paul. Go ahead.
Is there a possibility, though, if we do more labor with regard to solid waste, the employee who does that labor, can he charge it to solid waste?
I think the answer could be yes, but I would want that budgeted in there. And
it doesn't affect the overhead if you charge directly.
Yeah, but the methodology would include a piece from the additional staff, and I don't know how much that would increase the administrative cost rate, but I think that it's a good point that AB 1383, which is the organic waste legislation, does include all these sort of policing requirements.
Correct.
On the part of the district for commercial restaurants, mm-hmm. and stores that have food, so that to make sure that they aren't wasting food and that they're properly disposing of or reusing any organics that are out there. So, and we have a couple of grants from $20,000 from I think 2022-23, and then another $75,000 for 2023-24, but we don't really have a staff person yet identified to assist with that. But I think they haven't started enforcing. I think that's coming, and so I think it's a good point.
It's in state statute
that we should probably start to think about positions on that. That's another direct expense, but then that direct expense will have a ripple on the indirect cost allocation.
Right, and so I understand what you're saying, Martin. I don't know what that indirect is. Is it 0.5%, 1%? It's just we know that this unfunded mandate is going to impact us. Where before we've always said it's just a pass-through fund, it's no longer a pass-through fund. It's now costing the district, as it did fiscal year 22-23 out of the general budget because of the Prop 218 that was voted down by the citizens. That's all I have. Anything else?
We call it a pass-through. So do we just charge the customers exactly what we get charged, or do we increase it by the 2% that it's costing us now for indirect costs?
And Mark, do you know the answer to that one? I think that it's pretty darn close to the actual,
right.
But and so the overhead was very small. There might be, I think there's a timing difference too in when the rates get changed on people's bills and when the Cal Waste contracted rates change. So there's a couple of nuances about that we're going to have to dig into to align them so that we're not essentially losing money to the vendor that isn't being recovered by the households. So we're going to have to look into that. I'm not sure right now whether or not, but I remember it just as this split, that it's not like evenly aligned, like when the rates change and when the Cal Waste rates change.
You've got a couple different issues going on there.
And
if we're not adding our costs for indirect management, we should be, in addition to what Tim has brought up, that we're going to have more costs because of
SB 1383.
Yeah.
Well, we did subsidize, as Tim pointed out, the rates for about a six-month period, as I recalled. Our costs went up on a January 1st date, but our new contract our new rate structure didn't go in until a July 1. So when we negotiated the current contract, there was that six-month delay before we could actually increase. And so we subsidized
is that the $5 per month that you
You're seeing the $71,000 and where we're for the fiscal year 22-23,
mm-hmm.
Where the expenses overrode the income, mm-hmm. and again it was because of our Prop 218 was voted down. And so we had to subsidize everyone's trash pickup for that 1 year. So again, I think it's an anomaly, but to, again, to Randy's point, there's just going to be so much more effort on solid waste than we've ever put before, because it just, we didn't do anything. We've had great customer service. There haven't been issues. We've been through all the trash cans, all these other things. We're still working with the homeowners associations on, you know, does everybody still need one, you know, on organic? Are we, there's just a ton of stuff that are going to cost us. I don't want to belabor it. Everyone understands where I'm at. So,
but I think it's timely, because as we develop the 24-25 budget, and we can look at the Cal Waste timing for increases and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Right. And that might be even, I'd have to go back to the contract, right, for an economic item, if we can open it, to just align it to our fiscal year, mm-hmm, as opposed to their October, I think is what the contract was.
I think it's January.
It might
sure.
be January.
Yeah.
So, again, we can do all that. Okay, perfect.
Okay. And that's a long contract.
Yes, yes. So what do you need from us, Mark?
So what did we work
so
out?
So are we back to, do so we want to make a decision at a special board meeting to accept and retro these?
Yeah, I think that's the recommendation of staff, is that the indirect cost rate be retroactively applied to the open fiscal years. And we're in a strange situation that we actually have four open fiscal years because of the failure to close out any fiscal years and complete the audit. So you could take it all the way back to 2021, which would mean that you'd really only have 1 year that had that original ICR number one imposed on the district's budget.
Okay.
So it did not get included in this agenda as an action item, but we could call a special meeting at any point in the next week or so. It'd be nice to, at least if the board was inclined to do that, to get the 2021 year resolved and determine what the plan was going to be sooner rather than later, because the auditors are going to be closing the door on that year.
I understand. So let me propose this. If you could give us a timeline, and I don't need it tonight, but, you know, by the end of the week, how long it would take staff to get everything that you need ready for this meeting, and then Amelia can email the board members availabilities, and then we can have the one item or two action items on the special board meeting to retro it, like you said, to the open audit years that we have. In that, I would just obviously need what Mark wrote up, and then just the staff memo of what it looks like. But if you get that to us, we can get it probably in next week or so, if that works.
Okay, we'll do.
Okay, is that mm-hmm. good yeah. with the board? Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Continue on, Mark.
I think that concludes my report.
All right. Any questions for Mark? Okay, Kelly, please.
Thank you. Let's start with the operation needs and security, or operation updates. Currently, we have 8 full-time gate officers and 3 part-time gate officers. In patrol, we still have 3 part-time patrol officers, and we still have the 3 vacant positions. In the month of December, we had 93 patrol shifts in December, and 38 were not covered. Our fleet update, we have 2 working Toyota trucks, and our Ford Ranger was in the shop, went under extensive repairs, and I'll talk about that, why we did that, a little bit later.
That's for the VIP, right?
The VIP, I was
okay.
Yeah.
No, nope. Continue on.
Great. So, yes, exactly. But before we go there, I want to talk about, I have no video today, but I did bring a show and tell item here. The district has purchased 16 of these kits. And I have them to pass around to the board so they can see. These are what they call Stop the Bleeding kits, trauma kits. And we ordered 16 of them. They came in to cost about $1,200. They're in all of our CSD vehicles, whether it's on the water side or security. Nice. They're at our gates. We have one in this office in the hallway. I have one in my office. And this is not for us to go out there and treat the public, just in case we, as employees, might need these in our day-to-day workings. And this stemmed from the double shooting that they had at the Equestrian Center when our staff arrived on scene. The fire department needed to wait for the scene to be secure. And the interim, when the person was bleeding, they had difficulty finding some kind of a towel or a pressure. Yep. So at least with what's in this kit, they can at least stop the bleeding. This June and July, all of CSD will undergo through training and first aid and CPR, and we've asked them to give us additional training on first responding training in regards to shooting and tourniquets, and they'll be able to do that with all of our staff this June or July. Mm-hmm.
Refresh me, and I've asked two things. Uh-huh. One, throw it out to our allied agencies, whether it's RMA or to whomever, if they want to partake in our training. Number two, yep. We get AED training at that same time.
Same
correct?
Time, you get everything. First aid, okay. CPR, no, that's fine. AED,
and just briefly for everybody's edification, the standard right now in the community is AEDs, and all AEDs are supposed to have stop the bleed kits. And again, it's for mass casualty type incidents. What we're seeing, just it's a reflection of society. So that's what got us to this. Continue on.
Right. So I have that around if anybody wants to see it. We have that.
Yeah, Director Butler took some stuff out of it.
She took some stuff out. Perfect.
Like I always do.
Again, we meet with the compliance officers monthly, if not a couple times. And some of the issues that I raised, and I asked the compliance officers to meet with their leaders to see if this summer we can already start planning together a strategic plan to how to address the summer issues at the North Beach, the South Beach, the teenagers, the drinking. And so we want to try to get ahead of it this year. So I've asked them to ask their chain of command if we can have a meeting and start to address those issues.
Perfect.
And some of the ideas we already have in place is that I'll be meeting with the POP officer with the Sacramento Sheriff's Department, maybe meeting with probation. Maybe my goal would be to have a couple days where we do these mini task force and we actually go down to the beach and they do massive sightings, at least to put that area out there and get a response that way. So I just wanted to try to get ahead of the problem because we know it's going to happen and it takes a lot of our resources dealing with the North and South Beach. So I've reached out to them, so hopefully I'll hear back soon and we'll have something more to report on that in the coming
okay.
meetings. I understand that we, the RMA, very grateful. We'll be gifted with a camera system that's going to be put in one of our Toyota Tacomas. And this camera system is a dash camera system, and it'll be able to record all of our events that our security staff go to, whether we're doing traffic enforcement, we're at a large event like a concert, anything that our security goes to in a vehicle, day or night, these camera systems will be able to absorb and it'd be interfaced with their system. So we're grateful for that. As soon as it comes in, it'll be installed in our vehicle. Moving on, I have met with, I hope I don't miss his name right. He goes by Q. But his pronunciation, I'll call Lieutenant Q.
Lieutenant
Q of, not Dan.
He's related to Lieutenant Dan. They're in the same class.
So he's from the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department. This is his new area, so he came over and introduced himself. And one of the first things he said he was going to do is he promises that we're going to have a VIP officer. And that VIP officer will be here in the coming weeks. So he was here looking at their facilities. We're going to provide internet for them. Their vehicle, going back to the Ford Ranger, it's a 2005 vehicle, but it only has 35,000 miles on it. But we didn't keep up with maintenance on it, so we got it up and running, and it's here today, and that'd be their vehicle when they go right out there. So it's been 2.5 years since they've had anybody. I think maybe a little bit longer.
Oh, it's
so
been longer than that.
It's been longer than that, right? Yeah. So I understand the person is lives here, and he's a chaplain with the Sheriff's Department already, so that'd probably be a good fit. So we're excited cool. about that. It's been a long time. I've met with several background officers that come through my office, and we always give them insight on the community members, and I just wanted to put that out there that I do meet with quite a few background officers. I heard from the Metropolitan Fire Captain regarding the incident we had with the juvenile over the 4th of July. The case was not turned over to the district attorney's office. However, the case was turned over to their fire youth program, and him and his family have been entered into that program. So that's our closure.
It's mandatory at this point.
With that event. So we're grateful for Director Mabee for starting that, making that phone call for us.
Yep.
We had a citizen complaint, and I'll talk about this for you. Maybe you can jump in if I misspeak. But the citizen was concerned. We put out logs that go to the paper, and a lot of times what the citizen reports, our dispatchers put that verbatim in the comments of the call, and they go out for our patrol officers to investigate. And a lot of times our citizens will put in descriptors of who the person is. Like they'll say an adult male white, adult Hispanic male, a male black, juvenile, the gender, and our dispatchers will put that in our information into our system so that the officers can go out there and they know what they need to investigate. However, usually when I see these logs, I edit all that out. Anything to do with gender, race, addresses, I'll just generically take all that out just to make it clean and not to pinpoint who anybody is. However, every now and then, I'm getting old, I'm wearing glasses, I'll miss one. And I missed a couple of them, at least two I found, where the dispatcher will put in, like for example, the initials A, B as in boy, M as in Mary, and that would mean adult black male. And then Gail will get that, and she knows all the codes in the security police world, and she'll write that out. And that happened a couple of times. And the citizen actually wrote an email to CSD and said, hey, why is it that every time you're describing a person, it's always a male black? And I talked to her directly, and I said, oh, no. She goes, I never see anybody else. And I go, well, I try to audit everybody I can, but every now and then I miss one. And she understood that, and she was like, well, the community needs to be very sensitive of that. And I go, yeah, so that is my fault. If I miss one, that's why it's there. And I go, but in a way, that's transparent. Exactly what the community is reporting is exactly what the dispatchers put in and exactly what goes out. So I said, yes, that's my fault. No one should ever see anybody's race unless it's a suspect that we're looking for, then that would be different. So I addressed that, and that's the reasoning behind it. However, the other part of this, and this is like ongoing training to give us that professional security force that we need, is a lot of times, both in police departments and here in the community, you have people call in suspicious activity with no other reason other than the person's race or gender. There's a male Hispanic walking down the street. That's suspicious, insecurity to go investigate that. And it drives me nuts. So I say, so it's a whole big training since I've been here. It's like we do not send people out for suspicious activity just based on someone's race or gender. You need to focus on the action. Why are they suspicious? They're looking at a vehicle. They have a weapon in their hand. They're unsteady gait. They look like they're drunk. So we're really trying to push that with our dispatchers, but it's an ongoing training issue. So I wanted to address that firsthand, and that's what that complaint was. I spoke to her, and she completely understands it, and hopefully going forward we have no other issues regarding that issue.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add on that?
Well, I mean, I think my only comment is very data-driven, that you have seen many different descriptions that include many different ethnicities that are in there, but you have to manually remove those, you know, and that's a flaw in the software. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, trying to figure out an alternative software to that so that we don't have to have, because there's a lot of staff time that goes into screening those security logs, not just for ethnicity, but for privacy purposes.
No, I understand.
And Amelia and Kelly both have to spend a lot of time on that. So that's in our, you know, to be dealt with pile.
So a couple of things. One, I don't need an apology from you, Kelly.
Okay.
So I'll leave that there. And the other is, it sounds like it's Gail's fault for typing it out. So I'll leave that there. Continue. Yes, go ahead.
Kelly, when you were talking about getting prepared for next summer, I was wondering if, and I don't have the answer to this because it's not my wheelhouse, but I was wondering if we could put together some form of education for the youth of what we actually have as far as rules and regulations, as far as, you know, activities they can participate in, ways they can entertain themselves in the summer. Anything along the lines of getting their attention and directing their youthful exuberance in other areas besides wrecking things.
And that's why it needs to, not to use the phrase, it takes a village. It really does in this case. And mm-hmm. working with probation, if we can get to the high schools and get to them before they come out here and kind of put that out there beforehand, hopefully we'll have a better result than the last couple of years. Just thinking about it now, because mm-hmm. you know it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. The rules are clear. I mean, it says there's no one. The issue of a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, they can call the front gate and have all the friends come in, and they're not even here. And this group of kids are here running amok, and they legally or per our rules, we let them in. So it's not until that issue is addressed, and it's a larger issue to try to address those rules, we have to have another avenue. And I think this way, being proactive and having always any might be a better way to address it.
Well, I think a couple of things. I think lessons learned. From last year, last summer specifically, with some of the immediate actions that RMA took, gave us a whole lot of flexibility. Mm-hmm. So again, if they happen to be seasonal items that we work with RMA on, like we did this last summer, then that gives us a lot of where we need to go. So. I was actually going to bring it up next month, but you're a month ahead of me, so thank you. Yeah, let's get that calendarized, right. And we can work.
Right.
Because once we saw what was happening, RMA made some pretty drastic moves. Yeah. So that gave us the flexibility. So thank you.
What I was thinking about a little bit more was actually putting something together for the kids that, A, would familiarize them with what the rules and regulations are, and also, you know, giving them guidance or helping them find out what else they can do with themselves besides
culture. Oh, absolutely. But the big one is, if you're not 21, you have no business drinking alcohol, period.
Thank you.
And that's the big issue. So, yeah, it's shocking. But really, that's our biggest thing, and they know it. I think they know. I think the law part, they know it, and that's the biggest challenge I see.
We're still not there. What I'm aiming for a little bit is that we reach out to these kids and or to
sure.
people in Rancho Murrieta and maybe have some kind of evening program where they can get familiarized with some of this stuff
sure.
and where they are guided.
Okay.
Educated, whatever you want to call it. At first, it will probably be hard. You have to bring pizzas and
right. But the fact that we're
Cokes.
Talking about it now to
yeah.
have a plan, I think we could. It's a win-win.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. We're starting early enough.
Right.
I just kind of wanted to
sure, absolutely.
Throw that in there.
Okay. And if we move on to our next slide.
Okay. Oh, I love it when it's the whole year filled out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you can go down
right.
there and see our citations. Nothing
here.
Really out of the ordinary there. And our next one, there's no questions. We can go to the next slide. There's our gate entries. Again, I think our gate officers are doing a great job. 15,000 people going through our visitor gates in a month. And I got an average of one complaint a month. So that's still a great job by our gate officers. We go to the next one. Nothing special here. It's about the same. Okay. And we'll go to the instance of notes. And I picked a couple to show some things that happened outside of the gates as well. On Saturday, December 2nd, at 2023, at about 16:10 hours, or 4 o'clock, CSD security was dispatched to a possible distressed female who was located at the AT&T building on Scott Road. CSD security arrived on the scene and discovered that an incoherent female adult was slumped over underneath a tree. The adult has stated she had consumed methamphetamine and feared that she might have overdosed on the substance. CSD security immediately had the Metropolitan Fire Department respond, and the victim was transported to the hospital. Again, that AT&T building is a security site for us to check. And our investigation, we couldn't tell if she was, she did not live here in the north or south. We knew that. She was not a guest of anybody, but that's just a random person that we came in contact with. Okay. On Wednesday, December 6, 2023, a resident in the village reported that a yellow robi leaf blower was stolen from her car part the previous night. The resident had left the blower unsecured in the back of her golf cart. The suspects also removed two bottles of water from the back of her golf cart and poured the contents onto the victim's front seat of the golf cart before fleeing with the leaf blower. CSD responded, security responded, and checked the area for witnesses or video camera footage. Unfortunately, with negative results, CSD security advised the victim to contact the sheriff's department to file a report, and I don't have the value of that leaf blower. If there's no questions, that's all I have.
Any questions of Kelly?
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
Director,
yes,
maybe.
We have a
if
place.
It pleases the board. Which are yours?
A few days ago, the CSD website was updated with the September security log. That's about 3 or 4 months out of date. And it'd been a few days prior to that, it was about 7 months out of date.
Yes. October.
You seem to be providing that information to the River Valley Times twice a month. And I can't see why you can't update the website with that information.
October, we're missing some. November was already already posted.
I have it. I just haven't had time. Because I look, once he gives it to me, I do another check to make sure that he's taken out all the addresses. The same thing that Gail does. You go through and make sure all the addresses are taken out, names are taken out.
That's correct. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Before those laws went out, they have to go through a multi-layer process to make sure there's nothing in there that's personal. But Novembers are done, and Decembers are being done next week.
Okay. So from this point on, they'll be updated promptly?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you. Travis.
Good evening. Thank you. We'll start off with our water facility. Currently, Plant 1 is in operation. We're producing about 1 million gallons a day to meet demand. Plant 2 is currently offline. The goal is to take Plant 1 offline next week for maintenance and put Plant 2 online. Hopefully that will move forward. Water consumption for the year of 2023, the water plants produced roughly 526 million gallons of water for the year. I did not get last year's 2022's production sheet for comparison. I was going to do it, and I got pulled away for something.
That's fine.
But it's easily gotten if somebody needs it. Raw water storage as of this morning. Clementia Lake is 100% full. Chesbro is 75% full, and Calero is 77% full. We are currently pumping water from the river. We have both pumps going right now, the 125s, because the flow in the river is high enough. So we're on track for that right now.
I'm sorry, Travis. When can the stop logs go in for Calero?
April 15th.
Okay.
They
thank
can
you.
Go in, and they have to be removed in by October
right.
31st. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. For the water, one of the things that I wanted to bring up is we did our lead and copper testing this year. We have to do that every 3 years. We have. We have set homes that we do the testing on based on the parameters that the state sets on the age of the house and stuff like that. So we are required to do 20 samples. We try to contact 30 people because sometimes people don't get them in. So this time around, we actually had 21 bottles come through. We had one come in at the very end. Our ninth, we have to report what's called the 90th percentile, and so we are under, we are within the parameters set for the lead and copper. We had completely negative on all lead, so we're good there. We've had, and then most of our reads are on the copper. We did have one violation for a maximum contaminant level violation on one of the homes. I am working with the homeowner. We did do a retest to rule out operator error, because the people take their own sample, and the next sample that came back did come under the MCL. So what I'm doing is I'm going to be working with our state regulator to see if we can remove that violation as an error, because the lab reports those straight to the state.
Right.
And so I sent an email out, because we just got the retest back yesterday. I've spoken with the resident, let them know where they're at. So I'll be talking with the state, because if they will let us remove it, we don't have to report it in our
right.
CCRs.
Okay.
But if we do, then that will be there. And then there will also, I will also add a note in the CCR saying that a retest was done and it was there. But other than that, the houses that we are testing came back in good shape. I do have the results, and as residents call for them, I give them to them.
Okay.
To let them know what things are going on that. Any questions about that at all?
Nope.
No? Okay. For wastewater, right now the wastewater facility is down, the tertiary process is down for the summer. The dry weather influent for December was 0.41 million gallons. One of the things that I also wanted to bring up, we had an incident Christmas Eve, so couldn't get away from a holiday incident. So we had Mainlift North, which is our most critical sewer lift station, had a pump. I got a call from one of my operators that the pump was waterbound or was airbound and came out. And we ended up, it took us about 5.5 hours, but we ended up pulling out a good portion of rags out of the pump. And we also, there was a lot of grease in the wet well that was feeding that. Then the main reason for that is because we don't have the comminuter, which shreds the rags. That one is not working, and conveniently that just got delivered today. And one of the things that you guys approved with the consent calendar was the purchase of a second one.
Right.
Because the other one that's currently in there is starting to fail.
Right.
So hopefully with these new shredders put in there, it will prevent that from happening.
Okay.
But I just think the district likes me here on holidays, you know, do my work. So for the utility crew report, this first one is an answer to a question that you had, Director Booth, Michael, about the driver's license for our vehicles. And apparently they had a meeting, Michael had a meeting with a lady that was helping us out, that we paid to help us out. And I know Ron was part of that meeting. I wasn't there, but Michael did say that based on the weight limitations, that we don't need to have commercial driver's license. So that's where that sits right now. If you have any further questions about that, we can talk with Mike when we come back to vacation. I wasn't part of that, but based on what he said and what Ron had said, that we're not required to have them.
No, I appreciate that, and I have seen the backhoes being driven actually out to the sites, mm-hmm. so they're not being trailered. And the only other equipment that I had question about was the, what do you call it, the vacuum?
The big Ditch Witch.
Well, it's Ditch Witch is the brand.
The Vactor.
The Vactor, yeah. Thank you. And apparently it doesn't weigh over 10,000 pounds either, because it's being towed by a pickup truck.
That's correct, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The utility crew responded to 2 water leaks last month and replaced 4 service lines. Earlier in December, we had a fine outstanding citizen decide to run over an ARB in the parking lot at Bel Air Market. Completely took out the metal box that was covering it, and so we had water spewing out all over them for about 5-6 hours. They were able to finally get that closed off, and that was repaired. It's my understanding that we got a license plate, and it was reported to Highway Patrol. I don't know the disposition of that at this point. I know they said they were going to go out the next day, CHP was going to go out the next day and speak with whoever it was. I don't know if they contacted you or not.
I can tell you the license plate, we ran through our systems, and one of our residents hired them about a year before for some kind of work, and we gave that information to the CHP.
Okay. Very good.
The crew completed roughly 3,000 feet of sewer mainline jetting in Marietta North in Unit 4 last month. Electrical work at Basin 5 should be, the trenches should be starting digging soon. We've been getting our staff to be out there along with the electrician out there. Apparently has been a little bit more difficult than what was thought of. And then with the rain and then with other things going on. But I did speak with Ron about that, and they are trying to make that a priority here as soon as possible.
Okay.
And then I think that's pretty much it for the for the utility, for the High Points, if you have any questions about that. 2324 capital improvements program update. There was a matrix that Michael had made up as part of the packet, and it went over every CIP project for the year, and it describes the total amount budgeted, and then it also describes the amount that was spent not on the project total, but during this fiscal year, and then gives a brief update as to the status of each project and the estimated percentage completed.
Okay.
For development, residents north and east of the 40 homes that the developers permitted, 17 of those homes have been sold. Residents Marietta Hills East and West. The district has released conditional will serve notices for the Residence West Unit 1 and Residence East Unit 1 for water and sewer capacity. The Unit 1 projects are applying for final map recordings. Riverview Phase 1, the developers built 4 homes, and those are model homes and they haven't been sold yet for Phase 1A. And 1B, the developers constructed 8 homes out of 23 and then sold 4 of those. Riverview Phase 2, the developer has issued updated plans for the Phase 2 development based on district comments. The Phase 2 plans have been reviewed and comments provided to the developer. And Marietta Gardens Commercial, there's no update on that. That's my report. Do you have any questions?
I'll turn it to the board. Any questions? Travis?
Thank you, Travis.
Go ahead, please.
Did Linda have one?
No.
I just said thank you.
So, actually, this is more for Mark. On the CIP matrix, I'm showing water portion of CIP, 5-year rate study, budgeted of $225,000, integrated water master plan, $313,000 and change. In the financial report, there was a reference to $1.8 million being budgeted for reports. Mm-hmm. What am I overlooking that contribute to that $1.8 million figure?
So there are, in that budget for fiscal 23-24, there are two projects or two items that are included in the overall budget, okay? And that adds up to the 1.8. And then in another section of the budget, there's several other projects that, do we have an image of the budget that we can show that add up to?
Do you want to go to the website, Amelia, and pull up the budget?
Yeah. Pull up the budget, yes.
Yeah, the water study, the water studies in the budget are $425,000. And there are capital improvement projects that are in, and you'll see it when this comes up, that are 1.8. Then there's a CIP section of this.
So I'm sorry, are those CIP projects or CIP studies?
Those are projects. And so
okay, maybe I misread what I saw earlier in your report at the $1.8 million.
Oh, okay. You're thinking they're studies.
That's what I, that's okay. How I read
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
so,
how I read it, so maybe I misread it.
You're right, yes. So I did put a number together that was $1.6 million, $425K was water studies, and then there was another $1.88 that is capital improvement projects.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, then I just misread it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry.
So you're good?
Yeah.
Okay. Director Butler.
I don't know if you can help us with this, Travis, but in the improvements committee, on January 9th, Michael had put together a fiscal year 23-24 improvement plan matrix, and there were a couple of other things that went along with that. If maybe we could let him know. Okay. Right. But we didn't talk about that.
Yeah, I mentioned it.
Okay. Anyways, I think it's good information. I'd
it's
like
in the
to
packet.
See.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I just would like to see if we could take a quick look at it when he comes back. So can we put this in the next?
Yeah, we can. Amelia, would you make a note for this just to be put in under the utilities report next month?
Sure.
Did you want the same report?
Yeah.
That's right there, and then Michael will just be here to
And explain.
Right,
to,
right.
Just walk through a couple of things.
Did you have anything specifically that I might be able to answer, or
no,
was he
I don't
just
think
want
so.
A general going
I think
over?
It's good to look at.
Okay.
We need to take a look at it.
Anything else from the board? Travis, thank you. Appreciate it, as always. Item number 7, review of district meeting dates. I know there was some discussion about moving those. I would just ask staff to work back through those committees if we need to move them, either short-term or long-term. And then Amelia can update the calendar from that standpoint. I didn't see any, that's item 7. Item 8, I didn't see any correspondence in the packet. Okay. Item 9, it's an action item. Consider board's direction for proposal trail surface revision for vote for the residents at Marietta East Hills. I'll turn it over to you, Mimi.
Okay. All I know is that there has been a lot of back and forth, I think, about the necessity of the trails for the new development, and that the information that has been presented to date is not consistent with the regulations of the RMA. And the board, the meeting on this topic, which is, I believe, in a Parks Committee meeting is now scheduled for Monday evening.
Right. I see Mr. Kyle here. I also see some representatives from RMA as well. So obviously what we have in front of us is a request from RMA to support them in their process as they've documented in, what is it, five, six, almost a six-page document. So
I'll open up the floor to you, Mr. Kyle, if you want to comment something different. Just for everybody's edification, CSD is required as a board to give direction to the board of director that's representative to Parks. In this case, it's Director Butler, and I want to say alternate is Director Janko, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Historically, I won't go into why we're involved in this process because it's not our process. It's RMA, it's the MBA, it's all those things. But with all that said, Mr. Kyle.
If I may, I'm just going to measure something really quick here, just to be sure. Okay.
7 feet.
It's 6 feet.
Okay.
Well, each one of those.
Maybe my arms are longer than
yours. If you can start the clock, please, or I can do it.
Bigger wingspan.
Yeah. So, in 2007, our project, the Residence East, went through, or prior to approval, it went through a CEQA EIR process. At the time that it went through that, there was no plan for an 12-foot wide asphalt trail with 2-foot shoulders. And to give you a concept of what that is, it is the width of this whole thing. There's 12 feet in the center and 2 feet on each side. So this is what's representative. If you were in a flat ground, this is how much you'd have to grade, maybe with a little bit, maybe a foot on either side in order to get it done correctly. When your grade changes, which the East were blessed to have a property that has topography and an oak woodland, whenever you have any kind of topography, you increase the area that you have to grade. The average grade for where the location of the trail would be the width of this room. We are going through an oak woodland. We'd be removing many trees. We'd be grading in an area that's considered open space. In 2007, when this was done, this trail was not in existence on anybody's mind. And so imagine there's a mile of trail and all the impervious surface that has to be included in that. Sacramento County has told us that we are not permitted currently to build anything like that. It would have to go through a CEQA process because of all the mitigating factors that would take place. What was approved by Sacramento County was a 6-foot wide DG path. It's Exhibit K in the conditions of approval. The 6-foot path that's DG is, when I showed it to the trail stewardship, they said that's a dangerous thing to have for bicycles. It's very slippery and it's washes out frequently. So the trail stewardship recommended we put in a 6-foot wide natural trail. So they recommended a trail architect and a trail builder. Approached RMA for a change of condition from a 6-foot wide DG path to a 6-foot wide natural path. After 6 months of conversation, and this has to be resolved prior to February.
I'll give you another 2 minutes, please.
Okay. The RMA came back and said, sorry, we think that the asphalt path is approved. Well, that was approved in 2013, well after the fact, or 2018, well after the fact of our condition was put in place. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to go through the Parks Committee to change the surface from a 6-foot DG path to a 6-foot natural path, or in RMA's opinion, from a 12-foot wide asphalt path with 2-foot shoulders to a natural path. Either way, we'd be changing to a natural path. So RMA has decided to reject the to reject the change to the natural service. Director Butler took a tour of the site and saw the devastation that would happen to the site if this was required, even if we could put it in. So we're trying to preclude having to go back to Sacramento County, go back through CEQA, in order to get something approved that both Solos and the trail stewardship and the people that are buying parcels on this don't want. And if you can see it, I don't know if you brought the map, but if you can see the location of the trail on the map and imagine a 20-foot wide swath cut through there, you can see how many trees would come down. So we ask you to approve the change from the existing service and surface in the conditional conditions to a 6-foot natural path, which would be best for everybody.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Kyle from the board?
Not questions.
Go ahead.
Okay. Just to be clear in my own mind, when you started the project, were you told that you had to do a trail?
In our conditions of approval, it said that we needed to do a trail and that we needed to get it cleared by RMA.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I see the board president from RMA. Scott, please.
Thank you. I had a 3-minute time period to say what I was going to say, but I want to make the first point I want to make is that it was in 2003 that the Parks Committee, and the Parks Committee, as you know, is made up of two RMA representatives, two developer representatives, and one CSD representatives. And it was in 2003 that the Parks Committee voted for a paved 12-foot trail as the master plan. In fact, at that time, Bob Cassano, who owned the Residences East, voted for the paved Class 1 trail. That's right. Bob Cassano was saying, I want a 12-foot wide paved trail on my own property. So that was well before Mr. Kyle had to go through the county, which I think he said it was 2007. So we have repeatedly met with Mr. Kyle 5 times total, willing to discuss the possibility of a non-paved trail as long as it satisfies the important characteristics expected by RMA and the residents. And if you take a look at his latest proposal, he didn't give you his latest proposal. He gave you the second of 3. His latest proposal looks like it's essentially a bike trail. Now, the Marietta Trail Stewardship, who I appreciate, has no authority in on this issue. It's the Parks Committee. So, and this is just a little background on the trail. It's the only planned trail path, I'll use those words interchangeably, on that 146-acre property. It's the only trail that will feed into Stonehouse Parks, park from the streets. It comes off Puerto Drive, which is a heavily traveled street that has no sidewalks. Stonehouse Park is the most heavily used park in Rancho Marietta, so we expect that that trail is going to be heavily used. Once a trail is built, it's going to be RMA's responsibility to maintain it and repair it. Now, to date, Mr. Kyle has not given us anything to the specifics of the East Trail location. The plans you see are just general in nature. No topo or contour maps, nothing on drainage, no retaining walls, nothing showing the trail will be built to a structural standard that is similar to a Class 1 trail, nothing that assures us that it won't be unusable on rainy seasons within 1 or 2 years of construction. We're also concerned with legal issues, which our board has spoken about in, of course, executive session. And take a look at what is being proposed. I think Rancho Marietta residents and certainly the RMA board strongly feel that the trail must, one, accommodate every segment of our community, including...
That's fine. I'll give you 2 minutes,
okay.
Please.
Including children, golf carts, and people with limited mobility. The trail he proposed won't do that. That the trail be wide enough to allow residents to travel in opposite directions of each other without having to step off the trail. The latest proposed trail won't do that. and that it be structurally sound and designed to accommodate heavy traffic year-round. The trail must have proper drainage, and it cannot be dangerous to use on rainy days. So the proposed trail accomplishes none of these. For over 20 years, the Parks Committee position is that that trail is paved. I don't see, especially the fact that we don't have any specific plans on this, nothing. We get general pictures that aren't even of properties within Rancho Murrieta. So the board respectfully asks that you direct your parks representative to reject Mr. Kyle's unilateral request for a parks meeting, and if a parks meeting is held, that you direct your parks representative to oppose any motion that deviates from the Class 1 trail design that was approved by parks over 20 years ago. Do you have any questions?
I'll open it up to the board.
Can you tell me, there's not a scheduled Parks Committee meeting right now?
Yeah. No, it hasn't been scheduled.
Okay.
And what's happened is I think, just to be clear, there's no meeting scheduled. If you decide that your representative, because we aren't interested in a Parks meeting, so you have two representatives from the developers that are interested in a Parks meeting, two RMA representatives who are not interested in having a Parks meeting, then the tiebreaker goes to your representative. And if you decide tonight that you're going to that we should have a parks meeting tomorrow morning, we're going to send out a notice and have the parks meeting on Monday. But that's dependent on what you decide.
Okay. I understand. No, thanks.
My comment for starters is that I am the parks representative. However, this board makes the decision. I don't make the decision by myself. And so my thoughts and my comments that I will be giving out in the near future here, they're not just my thoughts. That's not the only thing that's going to be considered. It has to be coming from the whole board, and they give me direction.
Right.
So I'm not the person who decides. I am the person who has information, who has thoughts and feelings about what this all means. So I just wanted to make sure that you understood that.
No, I do understand. I think my that six-page letter indicates that I understand that the direction has to come from the board.
Well, that isn't what I got from it. Okay, for now.
It is six pages.
Right. Just kind of,
Do you not have a job? Or
it could have been a lot longer.
What do we have Class 1 trails somewhere in RMA property right now? Where would one see one?
We do. There's a listing in my letter of those types of trails. Let me see if I can find it. It's on page...
I read to you this, I didn't see.
It is in here.
I'm just trying to get an idea of what
it is. Oh yeah, it's on the third paragraph of page 4.
Is the trail that goes from the bridge to the south, is that a Type 1 trail?
I don't know, Rod, you want to?
That's a highway.
I can't speak to whether or not
I'm sorry.
You want him
Mr.
to come
Hart,
up?
Yeah, can you come up to the microphone? Yeah. Two reasons. Gail gets a better picture, and then we get to get you on
recording.
Oh, we
can blame something else on Gail now. Sure. Yeah.
So that's a paved trail. I don't believe it's a 12-foot. It was an existing pathway for the golf course. The one that's been installed since the park implemented or came up with those specs is the Escuela Parkside.
The Escuela, pardon me?
Parkside.
The Escuela
Parkside. Oh, the Parkside. Okay.
So, I'm confused now. 12-foot wide. We're talking about 8 foot of paving with 2 foot shoulders.
No, No, what 12
foot of paving?
Yeah. Which is what the Escuela side is.
Thank you.
Huh?
Okay.
So, I appreciate the presentations from both of you gentlemen and Mr. Hart as well. We have a very elaborate set of trails that make a lot of sense for where they are placed, and they're maintained by volunteers. This one I view as a bit different in that it's going to connect, as Mr. Adams said, a very busy thoroughfare in our community over and adjacent through the Stonehouse Park. As these additional residences are built in that area, it can only have the effect of increasing the local traffic on those streets. And I think that to have a paved pathway, and I'm going to use pathway as opposed to trail deliberately, but to have a paved pathway that ensures the ability of ingress and egress between those locations, especially when we have sports activities and other functions in Stonehouse, the ability to divert the very substantial golf cart traffic off of the main streets and have this connector, if you will, to relieve some of that traffic on the streets, I think would be a safer and more sound principle. I had a discussion this morning with John Merchant, who you all will recognize is a champion of natural trails in this community. And Mr. Merchant indicated today that he would approve if I indicated he favors the paved pathway for the very same reasons that I just described. And I'm prepared to make a motion that we direct the CSD park representative. I think we should have a meeting. I think the matter should be decided. I don't like the idea of leaving the request in limbo without an official response when all it requires is a meeting being scheduled. So my motion is that we direct our parks representative to agree to schedule a meeting as early as practicable, but direct her to oppose the request from Mr. Kyle and maintain a position that we need a class one trail slash pathway in that area.
Before we...
Okay, I understand. So this is just purely procedural issues. I have a motion.
I need a second.
Is somebody willing to second Director Boos' motion? Do I see a second? Okay, so.
Apparently not.
I know there's still more discussion, so I wouldn't write it off, but hold off on the
public
comments. Director Booth.
No,
I'm sorry, Director Butler.
Okay. Sometimes I just don't know where to start. But anyway, I've read a lot about this, and what I'm hearing is that we expect a one-mile trail to relieve traffic, to take people in carts from one part of Puerto Road over to the development. The development, which is connected directly by, all you have to do is cross the street to get to Stonehouse Park, to get to the pickleball court, to get to that whole section. We want a one-mile trail to take care of our traffic problems, and I don't see how you can expect that from a one-mile trail, and I don't see how that having it paved is going to help anything. I want to talk for a minute about that cart path, which is but it's called a multi-use path. And it's the one that goes across the river from north to south. It's a different situation to a certain degree. But that path is nothing but a speedway for carts. People take their life in their hands half the time when you go for a walk on that cart. I used to walk that when I was in a different physical position, but we're looking for trouble. And that's a huge expectation from a one-mile trail that we're going to fix our transportation problems on Puerto or any other part of this community. I've never seen anybody go 10 miles an hour on that cart path. I've never seen anybody respond positively to a request to slow down. We have lots of maintenance on that trail, especially on the bridge. And to ask security to monitor that that 1 mile path is another expectation of security that is already stretched to the limit. And actually, I also think that it would be nice if something was done in this community that was not directed at golf carts. And this just seems to me like we're asking for trouble. And the people in the residences are going to have through traffic, so to speak, if we were to have this kind of a situation. So I think that my basic take on this is that we're looking, Bob and his company are looking to have a trail, and we're looking for a transportation outlet. So that's most of my take. And also, I have one other question for Scott, and that is, what have the retreats and the Riverview projects, what are they doing to meet the requirements of building something, a park or a trail or anything else? Do they have any, have we had any requirements of them at all?
They're not annexed into RMA. What we're talking about is our RMA trails and the master plan. So, no,
anybody who comes in here to develop doesn't necessarily have to build a park or a trail or anything.
If they're not annexed into RMA, they're doing their own thing in terms of, I mean, that's why they're not annexed into RMA.
But it's in the community.
Yeah, there's 6 homeowners associations technically inside Rancho Marietta.
Not necessarily behind the gate. Not behind the gate.
Yeah,
behind the gate.
Oh, MTI, I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah, there's 6, believe it or not. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Amelia, you had public comment.
I have public comment. I also have gentleman, Mr. Van Doren.
Yes.
And he's on the Parks Committee.
Yes, please.
First of all, as a member of Solos, Solos has taken no position regarding this trail. In here.
Well, again, they have no authorization,
but to assert that Solos endorses this trail as he's proposed is a misstatement. Secondly, the proposed trail that's been set forth by Mr. Kyle shifts the liability and the maintenance to RMA, and that's all I have to add. Thank you.
Director Booth.
So I just want to comment briefly on Director Butler's comment about golf carts. Golf carts, bicycles, strollers, scooters, pedestrians, accessibility devices, all of those would have access, especially because it is approximate to Stonehouse Park. I think that is a sound conveyance for all of those types of means of conveyance.
That's a lot to expect from it.
Thank you. As I look through this, I'm back to 2003, the mutual benefit document. The irony there is the author was John Merchant, basically representing development. So I get where the Parks Committee took their action in 2003. Hearing what Mr. Van Doren just said, where it's really
RMA is the one that has to maintain the trail system, as it were. Those are two things that are jumping out at me. Mr. Hart?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify real quick to Linda's question. In the park matrix, there's a master trail plan throughout the entire community, which many of those pathways are natural. Many are street trails, and this happens to be one of the main feeders that gets to Stonehouse Park.
There aren't any trails shown through the retreats. Yeah. Her question was, why isn't the retreats
forced
to do this?
So the retreats are there's nothing in that area that our members can use and gain access other than the roadway. So it does have trails in regards to the streets. Some of the trails that RMA maintains are also streets. So there's not not every single street is going to have a trail. Only what's in the master plan of the parks agreement.
Understand.
So they were the folks who developed the master plan were allowed to count streets as a trail?
Yes, in some areas.
Where you have no common area. We have no common area over in those areas. And the RMA, as you guys are talking about now, for the trail systems that service the amenities within Rancho Marietta Association, those will be deeded over for the RMA to maintain for the rest of the time.
So. Amelia, do you have any other?
I have public comments. I also have.
And Mr. Kyle, if you would like, that's fine.
Mr. Kyle.
But are they related to this?
I have two public comments that are related to this item. Yes, sir.
After Mr. Kyle.
Just to clarify a few things, our subdivision has sidewalks. Our subdivision has roads that accommodate the additional traffic. Mm-hmm. So people are safe to walk on the streets, as well as the golf carts don't have to go down Puerto anymore. They can come and turn on our roads and lead into the park that way. So now you're going to have multiple ways to get to the park instead of just one. So I'm not buying that part of it. No one seems to be talking about the devastation to the area. We have 66 acres of open space out of 146 acres. Been very careful so that where all the lots are placed, they have privacy in their backyards and views. This would wipe it out. Anyway, that's what I wanted to add.
Okay. Amelia, public comment,
I'll
please.
I'll take them in the order that they
that's
were
fine.
Received. Mr. Gears.
I think the meeting should be held. RMA wants to go behind the scenes to shortcut the process to get what it's want. I think as part of the Parks Committee, I don't think CSD should allow that to happen. Next time it might be CSD that's on the getting the freeze from RMA. And indeed, I seem to remember that happened once in the past. I don't recall exactly what it was. You know, if RMA doesn't like the proposal, they can go to the meeting and make their case and allow the developer to respond. CSD seems to be moving in the direction of more openness and transparency, and I think this is a situation where you can put that into action.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amelia, do we have anybody else?
Yes, Ms. Reddy.
Betty Ferraro, 7348 Beliza Court on the south. I was the same as Linda Butler is now as a representative for CSD on the parks. I implored you on the park, on the board, to please give her your opinion to take forth. I was on that committee. We never had any board member solicit that. Our general manager did not, and therefore I had to go to meetings and I think Mr. Jenko was at a few of them, that I had no information whatsoever. So don't leave her in that position, because it's not well liked, because we only had one vote when we are on parks representing this community. Also, to answer her question about the trail system, that was part of the work that we did. And as you see on the south that she represented, the streets were the trails. Mm-hmm. And when I fought the issue as the one person, it didn't take anything. In other words, I could not convince everybody that streets were not part of a trail system. And that's why we have such a mess over here on the south. So please, I'm just saying, if you have any comment, and yes, this is a parks management problem, and please bring the parks together and do what needs to be done with the information she brings from all of you.
Thank you, Betty. Okay, I'll open it up to the board. Any other comments, questions?
We don't have a motion before us.
No. Go ahead.
Seems like we need a motion to discuss it further.
Okay, we can. Are you willing to put a motion for it?
Yeah, I'll do it. I think if there's going to be a trail, it needs to be safe, and it seems to me that the Class 1 trail gives us the safety, and secondly, it gives us a more maintainable trail. It's actually RMA that's got to maintain it, but it's going to be more maintainable. So we ought. The Parks Committee already decided on this Class 1 trail, and that's the standard that has already been set. So, number one, I don't think we need a meeting to, since that I'm in favor of the Class 1 trail, and we already have that standard. So my motion is to reject the meeting, and require the developer to use the Class 1 trail.
Okay. So we have a motion, if I understand it correctly, Director Pohl, that you want a Class 1 trail until that proposal is made to RMA not to have a meeting of the Parks Committee.
If I understand it correctly, the standards already been set.
Correct.
And...
So
I'm not in favor of changing the standard. So the one way to keep the standard is to reject the meeting. If RMA has different opinions about it later, then we can vote on what our representative has to say.
Okay. So the motion then is to not have a Parks Committee meeting. Because of the proposed trail is not a Class 1 trail.
Correct.
Okay. Did that make sense, Amelia?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a motion. Do we have a second to support that? I'll second that motion, and we can open it up for discussion. Director Pohl, I like your thought process, because that pushes everybody back to the negotiation table, mm-hmm. to at least address or at least give one more opportunity to address, especially what I'm seeing from the agreements and what the Parks Committee already has in place to what Mr. Kyle's trying to do today. I don't know if there's a compromise, but there it is. So it's open for discussion. I'll open it up to the rest of the board.
So I have a question for, I guess, Mr. Adams. And in terms of the motion that Director Pohl just made, absent a parks meeting, there's a request to RMA for this trail proposal. Is RMA in a position where they simply can decline and deny that request without the Parks Committee meeting? Or do you think that in order to do that, in order for RMA to reject the proposal, the Parks Committee needs to convene?
Well, the current Parks Committee position, if I understand your question, is it's a Class 1 trail. So if we don't have a meeting, that's going to be the park's position. Until and unless, and remember, we're willing to talk about perhaps a non-paved trail as long as it meets all the important characteristics that I described. So right now, the status is that Parks has the authority per the Parks Development Agreements, per the MBA, which refers to the Parks Development Agreements, to decide on what kind of the structure, makeup, the surface of the trail. And right now, the status quo is it's a paved Class 1 trail. But we are always willing to discuss. I think President maybe brought up a good point. We've been in discussions, five meetings, 6 hours total. Board members have been there, and me and Rod have been to every one of those meetings. We're happy to discuss it further. So does that answer your question?
I think so. I mean, obviously I made a little bit different motion, but I'm prepared to support Mr. Director Pohl's motion if it does exactly as I think he expects it to do, and that is say, no, you can't do this because it doesn't meet the standards already established by the Parks Committee.
Right, and the RMA board has directed its two parks representatives to take the position not to have a meeting as a result.
All right, thank you. Any other questions of board members?
Just a comment.
Okay.
After listening to the discussion, I know that we're in a position as having a member on the Parks Committee that we have a say in what the path should look like. However, RMA ends up owning this path, and they end up maintaining the path and the costs involved in that. And I don't know why we would do anything other than what they want as far as a path. So,
okay, I understand.
I call for the question.
That's where I was going. Amelia, can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, because Director Pohl made the motion that sticks.
I second it.
Director Mady, okay, I've got that here. And roll call vote, Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler.
No.
Director Jacob.
Aye.
Director Mady?
Aye.
Director
Pohl?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Item 9 is completed. Item 10, consider transfer of other post-employment benefits, or we know it as OPEB, from Public Agency Retirement Services, we know it as PARS, to California Employers Retirement Benefit Trust, CPERP, as we know it, a new trust manager. With all that said, I believe that's you, Mimi.
Yes, it is. Thank you. And we went over this in the Finance Committee before, and essentially what we're proposing is that the district transition away from a for-profit OPEB trust that's called PARS to the state authorized PERS housed a plan called CERBT, because the savings to the district is in excess of $10,000 per year and would help us to cover our unfunded liability more quickly with that approach.
Right.
So
okay. So with that,
I'm prepared to move approval of the transfer based on staff recommendations.
I'll second that. Amelia, can you do a roll call, please?
Director Bennett.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Jacob.
Aye.
Director Mady.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Item number 11, this is one that can just be handled so quickly because it has. Discussion on the wooden bridge transfer to RMA, whether they like it or not. Oh, wait, I put that in. Mr. Ramos.
Good evening. So as a bit of background on this item, in November 2023, the board approved a resolution finding that the bridge transfer to RMA is exempt from the Surplus Lands Act. So as a reminder, the Surplus Lands Act is a state law that gives affordable housing interests a first right of refusal for all public property in the state that's going to be transferred or leased to another party. So the board found that this transfer is exempt from the SLA, Surplus Lands Act, for two reasons, one legal and one practical. The legal reason is the property is covered by an access easement in favor of the community, so no housing could ever be built on this property. And then, of course, there's the practical reason. It's covered by a bridge and a river. So shortly after the meeting, we notified Housing and Community Development, which is the state department that is tasked with implementing the Surplus Lands Act, with keeping public agencies honest to make sure that they are not abusing the exemptions, making sure that they are putting property out to affordable housing interests. And frankly, it appears the department had no idea what to do with this one. I don't think they've ever encountered a bridge before through their department. So we got many questions. We blew past the 30-day timeline for them to approve the transfer, and they are still asking us questions and asking for meetings to discuss it. That said, I think we're probably close to answering all their questions and resolving things with Housing and Community Development. At this point, I'm going to recommend to the board that we go ahead and move ahead with the transfer. There's no action tonight. This is just how I intend to approach this matter. But move ahead with drafting the documents, completing the drafts that we already have, sending them to RMA later this month for discussion further. And hopefully by the time the transfer is actually ready for formal approval by both boards, Housing and Community Development will have wrapped their heads around the transfer and approved the exemption.
Okay.
So if I may, there's no action required tonight because we've already approved the transfer. It's just a matter of progress report and you proceeding accordingly.
That's correct, Director.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you for clarification. Any questions of Mr. Ramos from the board? Okay. We will get that rickety old bridge over to them.
I think it's got to be Gail's fault. I mean, you're going to blame her for everything else. Why not this?
If I may, can I go on to item number 12? Comments from general public. Do we have any? Thank you. Item 13, director comments. I'll start down this way. Director Pohl, any comments, suggestions?
I just want to thank the Mimi and Mark for getting us on the path to understanding our finances. So, thank you.
Director Booth?
I echo that sentiment and have nothing else to add. Thank you.
Director Butler?
Thank you, guys. And no, I have nothing else to say.
Director Jenko?
Ditto.
As always, I thank staff. I know it's thankless in a lot of phases, but Travis, you hit on something. On a holiday eve, you and your crew are working, right? People don't understand it's a 24-hour operation that we have. And with that, the board understands that. We support staff. We support the employees. We have to do a better job of getting that information out so the public understands it. With that, thank you. Item 14, I make a motion for adjournment. Can I have a second?
One second.
Amelia, roll call, please.
I'll take that for Mr. Jenko as the second. Roll call, Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Jenko.
Aye.
Director Mady.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.